Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome to the Run for God Run Club. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, you a worrier? Well, this week's podcast may very well be just for you. Jerry Snyder tells us that there's a lot of it going around. And then I will discuss how our training and our faith journeys are both very much like the life cycle of a crop. Well, this time it's me coming back from being gone, and welcome back, Run for God founder Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. So I pulled it off.
Yes.
2 weeks ago, I was talking about, you know, we were doing a surprise party for Holly for our 25th wedding anniversary, and you were here.
Yep.
There was about 50 people in this house, and she didn't have a clue anybody was here until she walked through the door. So that was
It was good.
It was pretty fun. Yeah.
It was.
And I got so tickled because we went on a trip the next week for our anniversary. And so if you didn't listen 2 weeks ago, I threw a surprise vow renewal party for Holly and I. Because she threw me a surprise birthday party when I was 30, and I never forgave her for it. But we went on the trip. We were going on the trip, and she, just in the middle of the day one day, she said, "Did we renew our vows?" I said, "Yes."
It was like a blur.
It was like a fog to her. She didn't even remember most of it. But yeah, it turned out good.
That's funny. That's good.
So
stuff.
How was it to be, you know, to let somebody sit in your seat for a week? I do it all the time, but, you know, to have a legend like George, I'm sure you didn't mind.
Yeah, no. Gosh, no. For George? Yeah. I'll give up my seat anytime.
He's a good one. Thank you, George, for sitting in with us, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, he did a good job. Always, he's an interesting guy. He's a very understated, very calm, but he says some interesting
things. Got a lot of good stories, too.
Yeah, he does. He sure does. Well, and you guys have a good time last week?
We did, got away for a little while, and Holly played golf with me. We had a couple friends go with us, and but you know, I need to just stay away from golf. I mean, if there's anything that gets me in my flesh, it's golf. I mean, and we were just playing for fun. We was playing select shots, so it was me and Holly against our two friends. And she saw my competitiveness, because we were down by one coming into the last hole, and I like pulled Holly over to the side. I'm like, "We've got to pull this off," and she's like, "Why?" Because we have to pull this off. And we wound up tying them with the last putt.
So
it was like, you know, Dean and I were high-fiving, and listen, Holly were like, "What's the big deal?"
That's good
but
stuff.
They just don't get it.
No, I don't get why they don't get it.
Yeah.
Our post of the week last week comes from Pat Park. He said, "What a great start to the week. A rolling 4-mile tempo run to open the week's training. After wedding weekend, I knew I would be feeling the full body fatigue effects of 3 long days with high levels of activity and emotion. So I woke up today excited for a tempo run, but aware that it was going to be a challenge. Expectations adjusted accordingly. I set out to find joy in pushing my body to extend previous efforts, knowing I've been getting stronger as we go. After a warm-up mile, not paying attention to my watch, I settled into a comfortably challenging but relaxed stride and pace and covered 4 rolling tempo miles in an average 8:06 pace and then cruised home with a 2-mile cooldown, grinning ear to ear, realizing God is teaching me through running to find joy in challenging and hard things."
Talk about an interesting guy. Pat's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
I actually had a conversation with him this past week. We were on a phone call together. And, man, I really enjoyed talking to that guy.
Yeah. He's talking here about emotion. Isn't it amazing how much emotion can just wear you out?
Yeah.
No matter what the emotion is.
Sure.
Whether it's good, positive. Obviously, you got good emotions here because he's talking about a wedding. That's good emotions. But if you're upset about something, that drains you just as much. If you're a worrier, we're going to talk more about that coming up. But if you're a worrier, that just drains you.
Well, I mean, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. I mean, the fatigue of the brain is much more taxing than the fatigue of the body.
Yeah.
And we talked about, I enjoyed listening back to the podcast because we talked about some really cool things about, we do need to get a neuro something, somebody on here to talk about how, you know, you can be completely drained from the day, come home, and then go for a run, and it's like you've got energy. So you've sat at a computer all day and you're drained, and then you go for physical activity and you're revived. I would really like to dig in with somebody to find out why that is, because it is true, no question.
Yeah. I'm sure it has a lot to do with the release of those brain chemicals.
Endorphins and dopamine.
Oxytocin and good stuff. And then he finishes it with this positive attitude of, look, he went into this tempo run saying, this may go well, might not go well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important that when we go into these things, even though we think it may go poorly, go into it with the idea that this may go way better than
I think.
Leave
the door open for it to go well.
That's right.
And but so many times we'll close that door like this. We'll just go ahead and predetermine.
Right.
You know, and many times it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's right.
If you say that and close that door, it's going to go bad.
Yep. If he'd have gone into this saying, well, I'm so tired, this is going to be a bad temper run, it would have been. But the whole positive attitude thing is good stuff and makes a big, big difference. Our trivia question from last week was a question you posed to George, and you asked, when did George first hear about Run for God? And I think that's the first time we've done a trivia question where we related it back to something that was in the actual podcast.
Had to make sure you're listening.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So most of the time, what people do when they hear these trivia questions is they Google it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I wonder what Google would say if I Googled this.
So when did George first hear about it? That's what you Googled?
That's what I Googled.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I wanted to see what I got. And the first thing I got was the Run for God website, which
that's good. You know,
that's a good thing to see, right? But then I found the story of the founding of the YMCA. Do you know who founded the YMCA?
Well, I'm seeing it in your notes right
now. Yeah. Sir George Williams was the founder of the YMCA.
Maybe that's one of George's ancestors.
Who knows? Well, he lived in England, but yeah, it could be still.
Sure. Right?
This came from anamericanminute.com. It says, baptized into the Church of England, he described himself growing up to be a careless, thoughtless, godless, swearing young fellow. Williams was appalled at the immoral conditions surrounding young working men, so he gathered his fellow drapers in London and on June 6, 1844, founded a place where young men could go and not be tempted into sin. The YMCA pioneered integrating prayer and Bible study with athletics. This was the beginning of the 19th century movement known as muscular Christianity, which led to the concept of good sportsmanship. Williams named this interdenominational Christian organization of the Young Men's Christian Association, or YMCA, to be a refuge of Bible study and prayer for young men seeking to escape from the hazards of life on the streets. Isn't that good stuff?
Yeah.
Incorporating Bible study.
Yeah.
Incorporating Bible study and athletics. Does that sound familiar?
It does.
Exactly. I mean, that's awesome. So so that guy's name was George Williams. Back to the question. The question was, when did he first hear about Run for God? And I believe I didn't go back and try to find it because I knew it was buried in there. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go back and try to listen to the whole thing again. I should have listened to it while I was editing it. I didn't. But I believe the year was 2011 was the year he first
heard. Pretty sure that's right.
I think he started doing some stuff in 2013, but 2011 was the year he heard. And when I'm going on memory, that could be a dangerous thing.
Yeah.
But it was, George was an interesting listen for sure.
Sure. Interesting back then and interesting today too.
That's right.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
So we're back, and so Dean, I've mentioned this on a previous podcast, and people have already started emailing in saying, "Hey, I want to talk." But I've started having meetings with prior Run for God coaches and people who want to be coaches come this January, and these conversations have been pretty incredible. I mentioned I was on a call with Pat, and
you talked with Darren the other day too, right?
I talked to Darren. I was talking to. I think I made their heads big. I was talking to Darren and Josh and Ben Reed. Yeah. And I said, you know, you guys are like the Mount Rushmore of Run for God. And yeah, Darren's like, it's getting deep in here now. But yeah, I mean, so the point being, if you think you want to join us in January, remember, the goal is 100 churches. I think I've got about 40 names right now that I'm needing to get. It's going to start to get over. I might have to pull you in to help me out with this. Yeah. But if you want to coach in January, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you face-to-face over Zoom, obviously. But reach out to us. Send an email to customerservice@runforgod.com, and I'll get that, and I'll reach out to you and get that scheduled. But the conversations have been great. I've been getting some I want to hear your input, because I'm going to kind of explain what all's taking place, where we're going, where we're headed, what's changing, what's staying the same. And they've been really good conversations so far. So if that's you, if you're thinking about it, reach out to me. I want to talk to you. I want to talk to all 100 people starting the Couch to 5K. This January the 13th is the date that we're trying to get everybody to start on. So January the 13th, think about it, pray about it. Talk to your pastor. Let me know. Let's get on the phone, and we're going to make this kickoff pretty special.
We're going to do it in Cahutta.
That's right.
We're one of those 100, yeah. And I'm warming up.
You and I haven't talked yet about it, though.
I'm warming up by doing the Dave Ramsey class. You know, I'm going to start it, and then I'm going to do Dave Ramsey, and that'll warm me up for the Run for God
class. So have you ever taught a financial piece university?
I have not. Nope.
Have you ever been through it?
I haven't. No.
You're going to enjoy it.
I know the baby steps, you know, and a lot of his stuff is really, it's just like running. It's really practical and common sense, but it lays it out in such a nice way that it makes it easier. And it's, you know, the idea of encouraging people, to me, encouraging people to get out of debt and to live with more freedom is almost the same.
What is it he always says? He says it's common sense with your dollars and cents, and it's God and grandma's way of handling money.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's very transparent, saying everything I talk about, you can find on the internet. In fact, the other day I was listening to him, and it was an interview. I forget who was interviewing him. He pulled this out of the archive. It was like 1996. And of course, his voice was completely different then. I mean, he still had the back hills of East Tennessee in his in his accent. But he said the exact same things that he says today.
Yeah.
It just hasn't changed.
Never changed.
It's kind of like us. You can find training plans online, but it's the package of the accountability, the community, the motivation. That's why we've always kind of really looked closely at Dave Ramsey, of how he does things with how we do things, because the principles are the same.
Yep.
It's the principles that you need for a lot of different areas of our life. We just happen to be the fitness, he's the financial, and there's other people that take other ways. So I'm glad to hear you're teaching it. I've followed him for years, but I actually took my first Financial Peace University this past spring.
Okay.
And it's very different. It's they did a good job with it. It's fun to go through.
Yeah, I bet. They've got such good people there.
Yeah.
All right, how about this? Headline, CBS San Francisco. Running averse man commits to monthly half marathons for a good cause. Grant Clark is running a half marathon every month to raise money for something called Special Operations Finding Kids. So this guy has this organization where what he does is he hires private detectives to find kids that have been trafficked. Mm. And it's great, great cause, right? Mm-hmm. Well, this guy decided he had never run more than 2 miles before at one time. And he just decided, you know what? He doesn't really like running much, but it would be good to do this as a kind of a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. And so this is what he says. He says, I always hate running, he said. I hated running growing up, so I started this 10 months ago just to try it out, to do something new and push myself a little bit. And, you know, he feels like it's the least he can do for kids. So what he does is he goes and he runs these half marathons every month, and he ties his hands together and runs with his hands tied together, just signifying the bondage that these kids are in. And it's just a neat thing. I thought it would be cool to mention this. And what he says, it's a life sentence for these children having gone through that trauma because it sticks with them forever, Clark said. And for me to run with my hands tied is really a small challenge compared to what they have to do throughout their life. Hmm. So he's trying to raise, his goal is to raise $75,000 for Special Operations Finding Kids by the end of the year. And if you want more information, you can go to findingkids.org and learn more about it. But I just thought that was a really cool running related thing.
Did you ever watch the movie Sound of Freedom?
No.
That's a good movie. It's about the trafficking. It was put out by...
Oh, I did see it. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. I did see it.
Pretty dark movie, but man, it kind of pulls the veil off of that whole trafficking industry, and it's rampant, even in the United States.
Yeah.
And I realized how prevalent it is in many parts of the U.S. So
it'll rip your heart out.
Good for him. Yeah, go check that out and support that for sure.
For sure. Well, we have another story from our resident comedian, Jerry Snyder. This one's called, There's a Lot of This Going Around. A man 90 years old was asked what he attributed his longevity. I reckon, he said with a twinkle in his eye, it's because most nights I went to bed and slept when I should have stayed up and worried. That comes from Dorothea Kent. Like a lot of folks I know, I own a rocking chair. Here's how it works. Two pieces of curved wood attached to the bottom of a chair. Give yourself a gentle push, and you're in business. I use my rocking chair to sit and read, gaze out the window, and sometimes meditate. Along with a whole bunch of other things, like swim fins, bifocal glasses, the lightning rod, political cartoons, the first library in America, the concept of a volunteer fire department, Benjamin Franklin is sometimes given credit for inventing the rocking chair. But no one seems to know for sure who came up with the idea. Humor writer Irma Bombeck made this discovery. Worry is like a rocking chair. It keeps you busy, but you don't get anywhere. Worry is allowing one's mind to dwell on difficulty or trouble. It seems to me there's a lot of this going around. Why? I'm not sure. The words fear not appear 365 times in the Bible. That's a bit of advice for every day of the year. October 11th, 1984, the world was celebrating the 100th birthday of humanitarian and former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. On that same day, I was celebrating my 33rd birthday. And on that day, I enjoyed seeing a traveling exhibit displaying some of Eleanor's awards, letters, and personal items that was making its way across the country. My last birthday cake had 70 candles on it, and this is what Mrs. Roosevelt had to say when she turned 70. At 70, I would say the advantage is that you take life more calmly. You know that this too shall pass. Humorist Mark Twain made this observation. I am an old man and have known a great many troubles, but most of them never happened. And here's some advice from Mother Goose. For every evil under the sun, there is a remedy or there is none. If there is one, try to find it. If there is none, never mind it. Worry doesn't change a thing. In fact, it's a waste of time. As a wise man said, worry is a misuse of the imagination. I'm a marathon runner. I have good shoes, practice yoga, lift weights, and put in the road work. Now, on race day, it's time to enjoy the sights and sounds of the course and crowd. Worry won't help my finish time. I'll focus on the fun. Quote, I don't know whether my life has been a success or a failure, but not having any anxiety about becoming one instead of the other and just taking things as they come along, I've had a lot of extra time to enjoy life. That comes from Harpo Marx.
Where does Jerry get this stuff? I mean, it's just one after the other every time he submits a story.
Yeah. I don't know if he finds a topic and then looks up all the quotes on that topic or something and pulls all that. I don't know what
he
does.
He's a creative guy for sure.
Yeah, and he loves quotes, and I love quotes, so it's fun to read his stuff.
I've got a couple coming up on the podcast. Yeah.
Well, this is a big topic, right?
It is.
We've talked about this. Our Sunday school talks about worry a lot because we've got a few people in our Sunday school class that are big time worriers. And so the topic comes up a lot. And I have my theory for why, and I may have said this on here before, I'm not sure, but my theory on why people are like that is that I think that worriers think that if they don't worry, it looks like they don't care.
Right.
They equate worry and caring. And it's just not true.
No.
But that's the way they look at it. And no matter what the subject is, in general, or people, like at least Christians, think it's great when somebody says, God helped me get through this financial difficulty. But God forbid somebody should say, my mother is sick and infirmed and in really bad shape, but I'm not worried about it because God's got it taken care of. you hardly ever hear that.
Yeah.
It's okay as long as it's not a personal thing. And so that's why I think people do it, just because they think it shows they care.
It's funny you say that. I had this conversation with a guy I was walking with yesterday afternoon about the idea. We were talking about death and, how as Christians, we get so distraught. And I said, one of the things that I think has changed with me through the years, and it's one of the things you don't say out loud in the moment because it would be inappropriate, is that if I'm going to see a believer and let's say they're in the hospital and it's pretty obvious, that they're in their last days, my prayer kind of under my breath is, Lord, take them on.
Yeah. True.
But it's to your point, so many times that's probably a little more sensitive than what you're talking about here, but because I'm praying for that, it's not a sign that I don't care. It's actually a sign that I do care.
That's right.
They're going to be, that's kind of what I say at any funeral when I go up and I talk to the family and I know that they're a believer. I'm like, they're in a way better place than we are now.
That's right.
And that's not just lip service. That's truth.
That's right.
We know where they're headed, based on what they've told us or the way we saw them live their life. And, I think I'm one of those that if I get in my latter days and the writing's on the wall, Lord, take me home, So, yeah, I see what you're saying. It's because we sometimes we'll put on the facade of worry in those days because it's better optics.
Yeah.
But I think as I get older, in those situations, Lord, just take them on.
Yeah.
It's hard for the family.
Sure.
There's going to be a lot of grief and sorrow, and but we can rejoice in that as well.
That's right. That's right. Psalm 34:4 says, I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. I want to go back to the beginning of that psalm. From verse 1 through verse 4, he says, I will extol the Lord at all times. His praise will always be on my lips. I will glory in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. You know, what David is saying is that he will always praise God. Most of the time when we're worried, it comes from fear, some kind of a fear, not necessarily a fear of somebody's going to, something bad's going to happen, but it's a fear of somebody suffering. It's always related to fear, right?
You know what? I'm just sitting here wondering. It's completely off down a rabbit trail, like I do so many times. I wonder if that's where the song I Saw the Light came from. As you were reading that,
yeah,
I saw the light, no more sorrow.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Maybe it is.
It's kind of, it fits.
It does. It fits perfectly.
It definitely fits.
Yeah.
Yeah. But did you I sent a podcast out, I think. I sent it to you and somebody else. It was Jamie Winship. And I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it. But the guy, he was talking about fear.
Did you send that to me?
I thought I did. Did I just send it to him? Maybe I didn't copy you on that. Okay. Well, anyway, it's still the same. In this podcast, this Jamie Winship, and if you don't know who he is, look him up and listen and watch some stuff with him. It's amazing how he lives in a very fearful environment. He's literally in war zones, mm-hmm. Has every reason to be fearful, and he's just not. And he relies on God, and he tells this story. And in this story, basically...
Now, you told me about this story, but okay. I don't think you sent me a podcast.
Yeah. So, in the story, though, what turns out, well, without telling the entire story, basically, you find out that the people that he's with mm-hmm. see this extra person that's with him. It's clearly an angel. Mm-hmm. It's clearly... But Jamie can't see it. Mm-hmm. Can't see him. And what he says at the end of telling this story is... If we could see what God has all around us,
yeah,
we would have no fear at all because yeah. there would never be a reason to fear. And that's so powerful to me
yeah.
to think that way.
And I think in our society today, fear sells. And that's the problem is fear is just pushed on us everywhere you turn nowadays. And, you know, I'm not... subjective to fear, maybe as many other people are, but a lot of people, you know, they're just kind of right there on the, you know, on the fence about mm-hmm. whether they fear or not. And then it's just, you know, it's a landslide of the media and everywhere you turn, and you know, the negative nannies, and just yeah, I mean, it seems to be more prevalent nowadays than when I was younger.
Because like you said, it gets attention. I mean, we're in a political yeah. season right now.
Sure.
And really, most of what you hear
yeah.
is just, hey, don't vote for that other person because here's the terrible things that are going to happen.
They're going right? to ruin the world.
Yeah.
And it's neither side is true. I yeah. mean, there's pros and cons, and you know, we're not going to get into that. But 80% of what you hear in the media nowadays is at best hyperbole.
Yeah.
And it works just right out lies.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about both sides here.
Yeah.
You know, the truth is, it's in there somewhere.
Yeah. 2 Timothy 1:7, for God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love and self-control.
I mean, we said it a couple weeks ago. We've said it many times. Faith and fear can't coexist. And as you increase one, the other is going to decrease. It's kind of like, you know, the more I increase, the more God decreases. The more God increases, the more I decrease. And it's the same thing with that's fear is carnal and faith is eternal. And it's the same pendulum there.
I never put those two together, but they go together. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. Wow. And those things are in a constant battle for us, right? We're constantly battling, trying to reduce our fear and trying to increase our faith mm-hmm. because our Adamic nature forces fear into us. And the only way that we were talking in church, we were talking about it's what comes out of us in times of fear or in times of anxiety is whatever we pour into ourselves. So if
that's part of my quote down on end. It's weird how this stuff lines up.
Yeah. Well, whatever we put in our, you know, if you take a glass of water,
sure,
and somebody bumps that water, well, what's going to spill out of that glass? Well, it's going to be water. Mm-hmm. If I have a glass of tea and somebody bumps it, what's it going to spill out? Well, sure. Tea is going to spill out. Well, whatever we're filling ourselves with is what's going to spill out when we get shaken.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea. Is if we're filling ourselves with God
yeah.
all day long, every day, then what's going to spill out when things get rough is God's going
to
spill out.
And everybody gets it, even little kids. I mean, Tom and Jerry used to do this. You know, I mean, they had the devil on one shoulder and the angel on one shoulder. I mean, this is not new stuff. And this is not stuff for just the older, mature Christians. This is so elementary. But so many times, we try to turn it into theology and deep discussion, but it's really simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good things in, good things out. Bad things in, bad things out.
Garbage
what,
in,
what
garbage out.
What is your fruit? What are you growing?
Yeah.
And it really is as simple as that.
Yeah. Gosh. Doesn't it drive you crazy when you think about how simple a concept is like this, and it's still so hard? to not
running, walking.
Yeah.
It
Yes.
I know some people don't like us to say how simple, but it is. It's
simple.
Simple. It's get out the door, lace up your shoes, and move.
Yeah.
And all the things that you're worried about in your life that may be going on health wise, they will start to correct themselves. Now obviously some things won't, but weight, you know, energy, all the things will start to create. It's really that simple.
Yeah. Joshua 1:9, be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. I'm a little miffed.
This is your flagship verse.
I am, and I'm a little miffed at Jerry because he left part of the verse off. Because the beginning of this verse is,
for the Lord your God.
Have I not commanded you?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's that.
The slap upside the head.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's told us. Look, I've told you this before. I'm going to tell you this again. And
what, by Joshua, he's probably said it, what, 150 times maybe?
At least. Yep. Yeah.
If it's 365 by the end of Revelation, then.
And God is trying to warn us. He's told us how 365 times in the Bible, do not fear. He's trying
something like that, yeah.
He's trying to tell us. And we just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what we're doing. Either we believe it or we don't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we believe it, but our actions don't match that. And I think it goes back to how we fill ourselves. If we'll fill ourselves with enough of God, the fear will all but completely disappear. But that's hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I believe that not eating Reese's peanut butter cups is a good thing for my health, but yet I don't always abide by that. And so what is that? That's selfishness.
Yeah.
And that's all fear is.
Yeah.
I mean, fear equals selfishness. It's you saying, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to have the faith that God commands me to have. I'm going to take all this stuff on myself.
Yeah.
That is selfishness. And that's all fear is selfishness.
Yeah. So how do we get better at that? It's just like running.
It's practice, yeah.
It's practice. It's just doing it.
Application.
We have to do it.
You can't talk about it. You can't theorize about it. You can't have deep discussion. It's kind of like running. You can't get better at running by talking about it. You got to do it.
That's right.
You can't get better at walking by talking about it. You just got to go. It's really that simple.
So you get better at not worrying by not worrying.
Yeah.
Question.
Man, we're earth shattering on this podcast, aren't we? But this is why God says it 365 times in the Bible. It is so simple. Don't worry. Two words, but yet we foul it up every single day of our life.
Yeah. And you're right.
But the simplest way is often the best way. What is that? That's some law. Not Newton's law.
Occam's razor.
Yeah, Occam's razor.
Yeah.
What? How does it go?
I'm
putting you on the spot.
The simplest solution is usually the right one.
Yeah.
Which
is true.
Yep.
Occam got that from God, I'm pretty sure.
Question. How do you respond when someone starts to dump their worries on you?
That's a tough one because, I mean, that.
It's so hard.
In a lot of ways, that's ministry. It's helping people
navigate
through it. Some people, I'm just, oh, gosh, I don't want to hear it because it may be the 50th time you've had this conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
But, you know, God had it 365 times with us. So, I mean, that's a tough question to answer, but I think as believers, we should help people navigate through that and to see that they don't need to worry. But many times our default is kind of like, you know, la, 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 you know, but.
Yeah, my default is always to move on to the next thing, to get.
Try to help them move on.
Whatever you're doing, and then move on to the next thing. And yesterday I was talking with somebody. This doesn't have anything to do with worry, but it was kind of the same mindset my brain gets in sometimes. And this is probably TMI, but I'm talking to a lady, and she's a widow, mm-hmm. and she doesn't get out of her house much. Mm-hmm. And so I'm standing, I'm talking to her. I'm actually out there. I'm actually trying to work in her yard some to try to help her out. And she's talking, and she's telling me stories, and I don't want to hear the stories. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like I need to get this done because I got something else I need to go do, and I don't want to. And I caught myself doing that. I caught myself in my mind trying to make excuses to move on, and I said, "She needs you to listen to her right now, and you need to give her your full attention. And this is a test for you. You need to be better at listening when somebody's talking." So. You know, it's just like God does. He smacks us upside the head and says, "Listen, here's I'm trying to make you better. Stand there and listen to what she's got." And it's the same thing with worry. When somebody comes and they start feeding my head full of the things they're worried about, I want to do one of two things. I either want to say, "You know what? You're worried about nothing. It's just move on." Or I want to
fix it.
Or I want to get in there with them and say, "Oh, yeah, there's reason to worry."
But it's funny you mentioned the lady, the widow you were talking about, because last week, Holly and I, we went to Jamaica for our anniversary. And this is something that I noticed about the Jamaican people. You know, our cultures are completely different. And the thing about the Jamaican people, they hang on every word you say. I mean, they're so engaged, and you start talking and they'll be like, "Pull up a chair. Let's sit." And I admire that so much because we are a society in America that it's all about the next thing. I got to get this done. I got to get this checked off my list. I mean, I am a checklist guy. And I'm not saying that a checklist is bad, but sometimes, like you just saw with this lady, turn the phone off, pull up a chair and sit down and not fix it, but listen.
Yeah.
Because that's, so to the answer to this question, how do you respond? How should you respond when somebody dumps their worries on you? Many times it's listen.
Listen.
Because that's all they need a lot of times. Right. It's just to get it out and just, you know, I tell Holly that all the time, or not all the time, but a lot of times I don't need you to do anything. I just need to get this out.
Yeah.
And then I feel better.
Yeah.
And you kind of get that out of your system. And
yeah, that's a good point.
That's a thought-provoking question for sure, Jerry.
Yeah, it is. Another question. How do you respond when you find yourself stuck in a room full of worry warts?
I don't know that I've ever put myself in a room full of worry warts.
Well, I've mentioned my Sunday school class. We have a room full. not everybody's that way, but we have a bunch of them. And so I know what that means. But I always go back to the verses in Matthew. Which of you by worrying can add one cubit to his stature? So why do you worry about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. And yet I say to you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Now, if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore, do not worry, saying, "What shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear?" For after these things the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knows that you need these things, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble.
Yeah, I think a lot of people take this verse and they wave it around and they say, you shouldn't prepare.
Yeah, it's not true.
And because there's a fine line. It's like, it's kind of like the people, you know, I prepare for a lot of things around here. I might have some extra food, or I may have, you know, I have friends who have like 10,000 rounds of ammunition. And I'm like, I don't understand. If I need 10,000 rounds of ammunition, to my point earlier, Lord, take me on.
Yeah.
I don't want to be here for that.
Yeah.
But I prepare. And so I think that's a difference. A lot of people use this to excuse their lack of preparedness sometimes.
Yeah.
But we also shouldn't be, we shouldn't tilt those scales the other way and just be, you know, if you're hoarding food and bullets, and that might be an issue on the other extreme side.
Yeah.
Because the Bible does say, you know, a wise man stores up choice oils for a day when he may need it. You know, we should prepare, but being prepared is not worry. Being prepared is being prepared.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it falls into that worry is when you start having issues.
Well, I think it's interesting that the things that he mentions here, what are the two questions that Jesus asked here? What shall we eat or what shall we drink? Do not worry, saying, what shall we eat or what shall we drink? What is more fundamental to us than eating and drinking? I mean, without it, we die. So he is saying even the most basic everything.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. You should worry about nothing. Now, that's a lot harder to do than to say, but that's what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it strikes me that I'm not a worrier. Do I worry about some things? Sure, we all worry about some things. But for the most part, I'm definitely not in the category of worriers. So I want to help people that are worriers.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do that by showing them that I don't worry and that God provides. But what do you think is the right way to help somebody who is a worrier? Do we bring it up to, do we take this verse out and say, here's what God says? You know, how do you deal with somebody who is a worrier?
I try to never tell people what they should do, because I just don't think that conversation ever goes well. I try to tell them what I've done. You know, look, I've struggled with worry in the past, and here's what I've done to try to alleviate that or try to steer me away from that. And I think that conversation goes a lot better than pointing your finger at somebody when they're obviously, you know, perplexed about something and they're worrying and saying, you shouldn't worry. Mm-hmm. Well, that does no good. I mean, it's kind of like looking at a lost person and saying, you're going to hell. That it does no good.
Yeah.
You have to be able to, first of all, listen, which is the part we usually skip over. And then you got to learn to empathize. And then you got to learn to walk them through it. And the way I do it is by pointing at my own life, and which is testimony, right? I mean, it's telling people how you've done it before. And I think that's, for me, that's always been the best way of doing it. Now, there are the other ways to do it, yeah, but that's the way I've done it in the past.
You know, Debbie's really good at this, because you know what Debbie does in that situation is she asks questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, somebody's worried about a particular situation, and Debbie will say something like, well, what does so-and-so think? Mm-hmm. Or do you think that's what they really think? Or do you think maybe they were looking at it this way? You know, a lot of times I think we can help somebody by just helping them in their head reason out a different scenario than what they think they
see. I think Debbie's shining gift, and it's Holly's shining gift, is empathy.
Yeah.
Debbie really, I mean, I've seen her before. You know, I've seen her put her hand on people's shoulder, and she uses her catchphrase, buddy. You know, and she really knows how to just defuse people. And I've seen her do that. But you and I, our gift, our natural gift is not empathy.
No, it's not.
It's, you need to do this.
Yeah.
You know, we just.
And sometimes people need to hear that too.
They do.
But not nearly as often as the others. No,
yeah. That's our default. It doesn't need to be our default.
That's right.
Yeah.
Last question. Do you know anyone who was transformed from a nervous Nelly to an optimist once they met Jesus?
You know, I told the story to the guy I was walking with yesterday of my dad, and I've mentioned that on here before, but I wouldn't call it nervous Nelly, but my dad was a fearful man. You know, I tell about the story, the tale of two Bruces, the story of two Bruces on the operating or going into an operation. And the first one, he wasn't saved, and he was scared. He was fearful. He was petrified because he thought, I'm going into the surgery and there's a good chance I might not come out. Fast forward 5.5 years to he was about to go into the last surgery of his life. He would ultimately die 3 days later. And he's like, man, I'm at peace. I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And I told the guy yesterday, and I feel like this guy was about to start weeping when I said this. I said, there is no other explanation, zero other explanation than Jesus Christ.
That's right.
Between those two people, because my dad had his tendencies. He lived, I mean, you knew him for who he was, but that radically changed when he met Jesus. And fear is the thing that I point to when I'm pointing out his life. It was fearful and it was a lack of fear. Yeah. It's the thing that really illustrates Jesus. And that many times that is the illustration of Jesus. It's no Jesus, no fear. It's the K-N-O-W. And, you know, to know Jesus, there is no fear, or there shouldn't be fear.
That's right.
He commands us not to fear.
Yeah.
When I saw that question, I immediately thought of that conversation I had yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that strikes me about this whole issue of worrying, too, is that I think that some people think they're born that way, that's just how they are, that's how they're wired, and so they can't change, right? And your father is proof that you can.
Sure.
But I would argue that it's a lot like I've had anger issues my whole life, and I've gotten way better at that.
Yeah, it's an evolution.
Yes,
many times.
But it takes time. It just takes time. And so if you're out there and you're a big worrier, I promise, if you'll just work on a little bit at a time and let God, I keep going back to God. When I get angry and I shouldn't have, then I go back to God and I say, God, I'm sorry. Help me. And he does.
But the crazy thing is many times you and I will use that as our excuse.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time, but it really doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, look at people who have life-altering experiences. You know, they got a diagnosis that they were going to be dead in 2 months, and then come to find out there's no disease. The doctor's misdiagnosed. I mean, those people, you hear about it all the time. Their life changes. All the things that used to just matter and eat at them,
yeah,
they don't even think about it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's because their perspective changed.
Yeah.
And so I guess I'm challenging you and I that it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be a process.
I think it can go either way.
Yeah.
I think it can go both ways. Yeah. And the truth is that when the difference is that if I have some outburst of anger in the past, my attitude was, well, so-and-so deserved it, or it was just who I am. But now it's, oh, I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we all sin every day.
Yeah.
And so when we do those things, it's that conviction of the Holy Spirit that draws, brings me comfort.
Yeah.
Because
we talked about that.
Yeah. Gosh. Upward Sports Run for God Run Club is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness journey and your faith journey. You get these weekly podcasts, but there is so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there, too. If you're not a member, join today at runforgod.com. It is the best value you will find. We'll be right back.
Dean, I mentioned I had some quotes. I've gotten to where if I'm listening to a podcast or I'm reading a book and I see something I like, I'll email myself. And I had two this past week that come up. And this first one was exactly what you were kind of going into. And I think this was maybe Mike Rowe. I listened to Mike Rowe's podcast. And he said, character is not built through adversity. It's merely revealed. Mm. And, you know, we always say, we used to say to the kids, character builder. Well, when you have adversity, you're not building character. You're revealing your character.
That's a good way to put it.
I thought that was pretty cool. The second one was, and it, man, this one really make you think, but I want to get your knee-jerk reaction. We are not meant to be happy. We are meant to suffer.
Oh.
Chew on that one for a little
while. That one stings a bit.
It does. Yeah. But think about the life that God's called us to live. Jesus has called us to live.
Yeah.
It doesn't say we're not meant to have joy.
Yeah, that's true. You know? That's true.
I mean, my mind immediately went to pick up your cross daily and follow me.
Yeah.
It's not a picture of happiness.
It's true.
I don't know.
It's true. You can't improve yourself, whether spiritually, physically, or anything else.
Without suffering.
Without some suffering.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought I'd throw that one out there and just let everybody wrestle with it, because that's one that I've wrestled with.
Yeah.
For sure.
Wow. Well, I have this. This comes from the Running Channel. Bhutan's Khingzang Lamo gets standing ovation as she finishes 80th in the Women's Olympic Marathon. So this lady from Bhutan, her name is Khingzang Lamo. She was selected to run the women's marathon because she was one of these extra, you know, we give these extra spots so that every country can participate in the marathon. And she has run, you know, like 3:30, something like that for the marathon prior to this. So she wasn't a terrible marathoner, but she was an hour behind most everybody else, right? So, but she got in there and she ran it. And it would have been easy for her to maybe try to go out with the leaders as long as she could and then just drop out. But she didn't do that. She just kind of ran her own race. And all of the people in Paris, I've said a couple of times about the people in Paris, how what a great crowd it was. And it was. Those people stayed out on that course for that extra hour for that one person to come by. She wound up finishing in 3:52. She ran 3:52 to finish this marathon. And the next person that finished before her ran 2:55. So literally an hour between her and the person that finished just in front of her. And people stayed out there and cheered for her anyway. And she just apparently just had a great attitude about all of this. It says her time of 3:52:59 wasn't the personal best she'd hoped for before the race. But for those watching on the course or at home, this was one of the best moments of the games. A unifying and heartwarming symbol of determination to finish your race at the Olympics. And of what it means to celebrate every athlete taking part. That's kind of the meaning of the Olympic Games. I thought that was a good
So explain good to me, because we were just having this conversation last week. I mentioned that Holly and I and our friends went and played golf. With this particular golf course, you had to have a caddy, you know. And so these two young guys, Jamaican guys, were caddying with us. And we got to be really good friends. I mean, you spend 4 hours on the course with somebody. And the one guy, you know, he's probably 25, 26, and they were talking about he was the number one golfer in Jamaica. And, you know, you're like, okay, whatever, you know. But he was. We went back, and we Googled it, and he's the number one golfer in Jamaica. And
he was your caddy?
He was our caddy. Huh. Yeah. But I questioned, I asked the guy that was with me, I said, why wasn't he in the Olympics? And explain to me and everybody listening, because I don't know. You have Olympic standards that you have to beat to be in the Olympics, but like the lady you're talking about would probably be very similar to this guy. He's a scratch golfer, but he's not, you know, a negative 12 guy in a tournament.
Right.
Explain how those exceptions work. Why wasn't this guy allowed to be in the Olympics because he's the number one golfer for his country.
Well, because Jamaica has a lot of athletes in the Olympics. They don't need to give Jamaica an extra spot for the Olympics for their representation because they've got plenty of track and field athletes in the Olympics.
Okay.
So there's no – Bhutan, they had one or two other athletes in the Olympics, but, you know, they were in some of these other lesser-known sports. And so the idea is just to get all these nations – somebody to get up there and step on the starting line. I mentioned somebody, was it last week or the week before, I mentioned about, I can't remember her name now off the top of my head or what country she came from, but she was in that same, she ran the 100 meters.
I remember you talking about her. Yeah.
She was in the same boat. You know, her country didn't have anybody in the Olympics, and so they wanted them to be able to.
So that's only if a country doesn't really have anybody else, they'll give those spots.
That's right.
And because Jamaica has so many others in the Olympics, that's why he wouldn't. For that reason, you have to meet the Olympic standard.
Right. There's nobody in the United States that would ever get a spot like that.
Right.
Because we've got folks in every sport. And, well, there are some sports that we don't qualify anybody for.
Right.
And, you know, that's the way it goes.
Hmm. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, though. I like the concept of, I mean, I think the Olympics have been somewhat hijacked at times. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, a lot of the Olympics still stays fairly pure mm-hmm. to the original idea, and I like that. So, all right, it's a time for Dean's thoughts, and that's a time when I share something that I've written about the intersection between running and faith. I don't know anything about farming, but something piqued my curiosity about it, and this one's called The Life Cycle of a Crop. I'm not a farmer, but I ran across the description of a life cycle of a crop, and it reminded me very much of a training plan. This life cycle works for soybeans, corn, cotton, or a marathon attempt. So let's go through the steps and see how it applies to our training plan. Step one, research and development. The first thing a farmer must do is decide which crops he will plant by doing extensive testing and matching the crop to the needs of the end user, as well as the composition and suitability of the soil they will be using. In the same way, choosing a training plan is the first step of preparing for a marathon once the decision is made to do it. A first-time marathoner would never choose the same plan as an Olympian, for example. They each have much different soil from one another. Step two, soil preparation. A farmer must till the soil and may have to adjust the pH or other condition before planting the first seed to ensure ideal growth for the plants. The runner must first prepare her mind to get ready for the difficult days that surely lie ahead. In addition, it is important to decide on boundaries. Is this a case? In this case, a training plan has been chosen, but what other goals are at play? Is the goal to run 5 days a week? If so, does that commitment have any wiggle room? If so, how much? There are many fringe questions that would be good to shore up as you start your journey. Step three, seed sowing. A farmer must decide how they are going to plant the seeds and spacing for that seeding. Then they execute that plan. In the running world, the phase of training is really important. It is the foundation of everything following. A lot of patience and consistency in the base phase of training will produce a body that is ready for the work of running longer and faster. Step four, irrigation and fertilization. Farmers must supplement rainfall in most years with watering of the crops when there are gaps in the rainfall. In addition, they use fertilizers to ensure the best conditions for growing. As runners, it's important to adjust for unforeseen circumstances. It is rare that everything goes perfectly according to plan along the way. What happens when we have to take a day off because of an emergency? What happens when we have a little knee pain along the way? How do we deal with these issues? How we deal with these issues will go a long way to determining how successful we are in the end goal. Step five, pest and disease control. A farmer must decide how to control for possible pests and diseases without hurting their crop yields. This is where a runner does all the little things that can insulate from injury and help to make the body as fresh as possible. Foam rolling, stretching, strength work, sleep, and all the other things that can make a difference to our health and vitality can be critical to our success. Most training plans do not include all of these items, so it is important to add them. A farmer can lose an entire crop because of an infestation or disease, so being proactive is important. A runner must also be proactive to ward off possible injuries and setbacks. Harvesting, step 6. This is the time the farmer gathers his crops to prepare them for the market. For runners, it is race day. When a farmer pulls his crops is very important, but a runner is doing something a little different. Instead of racing on the day the body is optimized, we try to get our body optimized for the day of the race. It's a small distinction, but an important one. It turns out that they won't hold the race on the day you decide you're ready. Step 7, post-harvest handling. This is where all the preparation and packaging happens for the farmer. For the runner, it is when we bask in the glory of having completed a long task. We take time to enjoy the new freedom for just a while because we know step 1 is right around the corner for the next goal. Now think about all these steps as it relates to our Christian walk. They all apply, from the accepting of Jesus as Lord and Savior to preparing our soil and sowing our seeds through getting connected to a supporting group in a church to watering and strengthening our relationship to God through Bible study and prayer and to an eventual harvest. The best part will be the post-harvest step when we are in heaven worshiping continually at the feet of our Lord and Savior. When we embark on the journey to run a marathon or any other distance for that matter, it is a process of trying to grow your body in preparation for the ultimate event. Realizing how similar they are could help you in your journey. If you have struggled in the past to see the big picture before you embark on a journey to a marathon finish line, maybe this helps put it all in perspective. And if you're wondering why your relationship with God is not flourishing, maybe discovering that you are skipping steps in the process could help you get on track.
That's a great story, Dean. I didn't know you had so much interest in farming.
I don't.
Yeah. It's fun to learn about, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just happened to hear an interview with Jakob Ingebrigtsen.
Really?
That's where this came from, because Jakob Ingebrigtsen, he was talking about how his training differs from other people. So other people will try to peak for other races. And he doesn't do that. He never does that. He doesn't peak for any other race except for the one, that big race. And he says that if you do, it's like if you're a carrot farmer, mm-hmm. and you pull that carrot up out of the ground to see how it's doing, mm-hmm. You can't put it back in the ground. Mm-hmm. And he says that's what it's like when you peak for a race before the big day. Is you're pulling that carrot out of the ground just so you can see how it's doing.
Yeah.
But now you can't go back. Hmm. And I thought that was pretty good. You know, we've met people who try to peak for everything.
Yeah.
Right? From
yeah.
a training standpoint.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you try to peak for everything, you peak for nothing.
Right.
Because you'll never get there.
Sure.
In that case, right? Especially if you race a lot. So, yeah. I thought this was an interesting way that... These two go together. They're so similar.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and if you skip steps when you're planting a crop or grass for that matter or anything else, mm-hmm. what happens?
Yeah,
well, terrible, devastating things can happen.
And you can't farm quickly.
That's right.
Just like you can't. You know, how many people have called us and said, "Hey, you know, we want to do the 5K challenge, but we need to do it in 8 weeks."
Yeah.
Don't do that. I mean, yeah, you can plant corn and you can go pick it, you know, when it's 60 days from being ripe, but you're going to have, you know, baby corn.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ready. But
yeah.
The problem with, you know, crops is it's not ripe. And problem with our running is you're going to get hurt. You know, there's a good chance you're going to get hurt. So,
yeah. And I think the problem lies in that sometimes, like, We can plant a crop and not test the soil and not see what's going on in the soil, mm-hmm. and just plant it. And we might get lucky.
Yeah.
And everything might turn out great. And we do that with our running too. You know, we just go at it and we don't really prepare ourselves, and we might get away with it,
mm-hmm.
but we might not.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important.
It's a good parallel, Dean.
Yeah.
At Upward Sports and Run for God, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey. But we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. Sign up today for the Self-Paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you running and walking tips of the day and finish with a different encouraging quote in each episode. You must be a Run Club member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today.
Every week I share a reason why running and or walking are so good for you, are so awesome. And the reason this week is that sometimes the benefits we get from running or walking, we don't even fully understand them. Mm-hmm. So this past week, Angie posted on Facebook about myokines. Well, these things are their little proteins that are secreted from our muscles when we do prolonged exercise with running, walking, swimming, cycling, all those things, right? And she mentioned some of the benefits they have to do with adaptation and tissue regeneration, and there's a lot of evidence for that. But there's also potential evidence that they help us with things like cancer even, like that they're that big of a deal. But we don't even really understand how they work. And the more we learn about running, it seems like the more we find out that it's good for us. Mm-hmm. We never find out something that, well, we should stop doing it because it's bad for us. We just learn more good things. Kind of like the Bible, right? When we dig into the Bible, the more we learn, the better it gets.
Mm. It's a good point.
Yeah, pretty good. Well, here's something to check out if you're interested. There's a new series on Netflix called Sprint. Now, I'm going to say this up front. It has some foul language in it. You got to be ready for that. But it shows you kind of the world of sprinters. I've seen a lot of documentaries and things on distance runners. What a difference. Hmm. I mean, they're like all they're like a whole different sport.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. There's nothing similar, hardly. They meet at the track. That's about the only similarity between them. But I thought it was interesting. So maybe something that you can check out. You know, and it's interesting, too. I think that middle distance runners also have a different mindset from distance runners. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll never hear a marathon runner ever be like, I'm going to kick your tail. You know, you just don't have that that cockiness from a marathon runner. But the shorter the distance gets, the more cocky they get.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. And I'm not downing the sprinters. That's just a different mindset.
Yeah.
And but it's interesting to see.
That's one cool thing about the days of Netflix and streaming services is the documentaries.
Yeah.
Holly and I watch a lot of them now. Have we talked about the Blue Zones on here yet?
Yeah.
That's a good one to go watch. It doesn't have any language.
I haven't watched that. I need to watch that.
That one's very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it just focuses on the five areas of the world that is the highest concentration of people living over 100.
Yeah.
And back to our earlier point, most of the secrets are not secrets.
They're not secrets.
They're simple.
Yep.
They're, you know, like I forget what country it is. You know, they don't have tables. I mean, they don't have chairs. Everybody sits on the floor. It's one of the Oriental countries. And everybody sits on the floor. Well, the guy makes the observation, which is an obvious observation, that these people basically do 1 to 200 squats every day.
Yeah.
That's going to keep you young. That's
good fitness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just part of their life. It's not, they don't look at it as fitness. These people really don't work out like in a gym, or it's just how they live their lives. It's incorporated into how they live their life.
Can you imagine how our life, the amount of time that we live, how it would have decreased if we didn't have medicine? Because really, how we're staying alive now.
Yeah, and our medicine is five times what those countries are.
Yeah,
well, our medical use.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. It's because of that. You know, nowadays we want the big plush lazy boys, which I love a lazy boy, but at some point we got to start thinking, maybe we need to start doing more hard things, because these areas of the world where they live over 100 years old, it's back to the simplicity of just move.
Yep.
Move.
Amen. Amen.
Walk places, you know.
Makes a difference.
It does.
Well, did you see the repechage rounds at the Olympics in any of the sports?
Okay. I don't even know what you just said, Dean.
Well, okay. So they had these repechage rounds, and what they were was, it was like, okay, you have the 100 meters, and there's like 12 heats of the 100 meters to start with. The ones that don't go to the next round get to run in a repechage round. And they take a few people from that repechage round to go in to, it's like a second chance.
Kind of like double elimination.
Yeah, sort of like that.
Dodgeball days.
Yeah, yeah. And there's been a lot of, because this is the first Olympics they've ever done it, they did it in almost all of the sports they did this. So it was mandated by the Olympic Committee. This wasn't something that track and field decided they were going to do, but they did do it in track and field. I don't know if I like it or I don't like it. So I was going to ask your opinion on it, but
I get the concept, and there have been times, and you were just talking about one a few weeks ago. I'm trying to think of her name, that she fell. Are you foul? Some of the best athletes in the world that have trained their entire lives for 20 seconds of whatever. And for something freak to happen.
Yeah.
It would be a shame that they don't have, not that they automatically get another chance, but that they have another opportunity to get another chance.
That's a good point.
I mean, just think about if it was your child or maybe you were in the Olympics and you were running the steeplechase and you're the best in the world. And, now, I wouldn't even put tripping over a barrier in there. Maybe, you sneezed at the start line and you false started. I mean, that would just be a shame,
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But on the flip side,
that's part of it.
It's part of it. So, I don't know how. I guess I could go either way. It doesn't bother me that they have it.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not fighting mad that they do have it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that same boat. Yeah.
Because it's one thing if only certain people got that, but everybody's got that opportunity from the outset. And that's what's important, is the playing field level.
Well, I thought it's great for, especially for those in the that don't really have a chance. They get to get out there and run twice.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't otherwise. They would go and, I'm in 100 meters. I go and I run for 10 seconds and I'm done. At least now you get to run for 20.
But so just to make sure I'm clear, if they get that second chance, do they have the opportunity to get themselves back in the final?
Do.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
They do.
Okay.
They
that
do.
Makes sense to me.
Yep. And there were very few that made it into the final in those cases.
Yeah.
Freddie Crittenden actually used the process to get himself into the final. But anyway, I thought it was interesting. It was interesting. A trivia question for this week.
Where do you come up with these?
How long would it take a garden snail to cover a full marathon if it could do so without stopping? And if you know the
answer, this sounds like a Jerry Snyder question.
Well, it's appropriate to ask this question on Jerry's. Yeah. So if you know the answer to that and you're a member of Run at of Upward Running, Run for God, then you can send that to Dean at Run for God. And if you're the first person to give me the correct answer, you will win $20 off in the Run for God store. How long would it take a snail to cover a full marathon?
Hmm. Wow.
So, that one should be good.
Interesting. Hey, so before we start signing off here, again, I need you, if you're listening to this, I want to talk to you, because I want to paint the whole picture of what it looks like to coach a 5K challenge this January the 13th. We need 100. I would love 200, but our goal is 100. We want 100 coaches to be joining, locking arms with us January 13th, to be coaching the 5K challenge in your community, in your church, but doing it alongside everybody from all around the country. This is something we've really never done before.
Yeah.
We had the church models, and then COVID happened, and along came Run Club, and this is us bringing those two things back together for an incredible. Now, I've talked to some people, and they're like, well, it's cold here in January, but it's not in April. when you're going to be graduating.
That's right.
You know, you're either going to be starting in good weather or you're going to be finishing in good weather. And so, you know, in 3 months' time, weather changes everywhere in the country.
That's right.
So don't, that's right. Yeah, and just think of it this way. With the 5K challenge, you're running shorter. You know, you can do it a lot. You can start the 5K challenge like in a gym.
That's right.
And so, yeah, correct. Don't just write it off when you're hearing me talk about it. Let's have a conversation about it. Shoot an email to customerservice@runforgod.com. I'll reach out to you.
And I know people that have been in my classes. They'll talk about how, man, Dean was hardcore. He got us out there. It was spitting snow and we were out there. And it's like, yeah. And they're proud of it.
I'm telling you, there is something about doing things. We've talked about it already on this podcast. Doing hard things in hard circumstances that just makes you. I'm convinced your hardcore barometer just goes up.
Absolutely.
Several clicks when you do that.
Amen. Well, let me leave you with this motivational thought of the week. It comes from H.G. Wells, of all people. He said, "The crisis of today is the joke of tomorrow."
Is that Wells Fargo, H.G. Wells? Is it?
No.
What is his name?
That's Wells Fargo.
No, Wells is the guy's name.
Oh, I don't know. H.G. Wells is a writer. He wrote War of the Worlds.
Oh.
He's a science fiction writer.
Is.
Yeah.
Wells Fargo is something. I want to say it's initials and then Wells.
Well, I don't know who. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. But anyway, I thought this it sounds like kind of a weird quote compared with the normal quotes that we have. But, you know, we talked about worry today, and this is the truth. The truth is a lot of things that we worry about today, we laugh about tomorrow. And so how many times do you go and you're terribly worried about something, and the next day you go, why was I so concerned about that?
Henry Wells.
So it was H. Wells.
Yeah.
Son of a gun.
Sorry about that. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
It's all good. All right. Well, that's 232 podcasts in the bucket, along with some bonus podcasts. So it's 240-something podcasts. So thanks for listening. We appreciate
it. For sure.
Yeah, share it. Make sure that you're getting other people involved, too. We'd love to have more people with their ears on listening to us. Hopefully, we can get through to some folks with the gospel. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.